Good afternoon. I'm Bonnet Fontaine, Public Information Officer for the California Independent System Operator. Welcome to today's ISO press briefing. Today with us is Vice President of Operations Eric Schmidt, Vice President of Market Policy and Performance Mark Rothleder, and Real-Time Operations Director John Phipps. And they're here today to explain the need for the Flex Alert, as well as provide an update on grid operations. And while we understand there's an interest in the August heat wave, a root cause analysis is underway, and our focus today is on the need for conservation over the holiday weekend. If you have questions about the August event, you can always visit our news page at kiso.com. And with that, I'll open up the presentation.
Okay, thank you, Bonnet. Excuse me, it's Eric Schmidt, Vice President of Operations. And we've brought you together this afternoon to give you a heads up on another weather pattern, a heat wave that's going to be on top of California starting in Saturday, probably through Monday, maybe even Tuesday. And so we'll need help. And I think first and foremost, I should say thank you to customers out there that helped us get through the mid-August event. It was an important factor, and indeed, we're asking for that kind of support again as we go into this weekend with this heat wave where we expect high loads. Loads at this point that we think will be close to the period of August 14th through the 18th. We've taken some actions already in anticipation of this weekend, and I'm gonna have John Phipps, our Director of Real-Time Operations, walk through some of the details to get us going. John?
Thank you, Eric. All right, yeah, I'm John Phipps, Director of Real-Time Operations, and so I'll kind of go over the outlook for this weekend, and I do want to reiterate what Eric said, though. The response we got, especially on October 17th and 18th, was unprecedented, and we saw an impact of nearly thousands of megawatts that made those 2 days much more manageable. And so just very grateful for that help. Coming for this weekend, the high temperatures and loads are looking to be high, maybe not quite as high as the last heat event, but the current forecast for tomorrow, for Saturday, let's start up on Saturday, September 5th, is a 44,237. And the Sunday forecast is a 46,636. Monday is a 45,060. And since some of our analysis has shown that, that those numbers start to approach our maximum capability, we have activated our 4420 operating procedure, which is our alerts, warnings, and emergencies. We did issue the restricted maintenance operation yesterday. That'll be in effect from Saturday, September 5th, through Monday, the 7th. That would make sure that we get any line outages, transmission line outages, ended and put those lines back in service to maximize our transmission capability. We've also ended a lot of generation outages, notified generation owners will need them to make themselves fully available, and we may even be dispatching them to their maximum capability. We this morning issued a flex alert to give the public notice that we are anticipating high loads and need their help again. I've also been working closely with our neighboring balancing authorities just to help make sure that we are all coordinated going into this weekend. So the close coordination between the balancing authorities and the California agencies, we're lining everything up we can to be as prepared for this as we can. And that's probably about it on that. And I'll leave it for questions later on.
Okay, thanks, thanks, John. So any questions out there, please?
So if you have a question, you can raise your hand by pressing pound two, and we ask that you start with by providing your name and affiliation.
We do have about five hands raised. Going to the first caller, please go ahead. Please state your name and affiliation and your question.
Yeah, this is Rob Nicoleski from the San Diego Union Tribune. The question I've got is for the uninitiated, can't the ISO just order a bunch of energy supplies ahead of time for this weekend? to make sure that we've got enough energy in the state to tide us through Labor Day weekend?
So, Mark, can you take that question?
Sure. Yeah, the entire West is competing for supply going into these hot periods. We rely on what is a limited set of capacity in California and the West, and when you get to these high load levels, it's stretching that capacity.
So, is that a function of the day ahead markets? I mean, again, for the uninitiated, if you can kind of walk us through this.
Yeah, so for California, we operate a market, and we load serving entities schedule and bid into that market, procuring energy to meet their forecasted levels. It relies on effectively resources that are offering into the market. There's a resource adequacy requirement in California that load serving entities have sufficient capacity to meet forecasted load plus 15% planning reserve margin. Those resources are obligated to make themselves available to the market. When you're at these high load levels, that capacity that's available under the resource adequacy can be fully utilized.
And then my last question would be, since September can be just as hot as August in California, can we expect more incidents like we had in mid-August and now beginning of September where we're having flex alerts? Is this sort of like the new normal for California?
Well, September is still summertime for us, especially down south, and so many of our records, our seasonal records, are set in September timeframe. So we obviously are going to have heavy loads this weekend through this holiday weekend, and until we clear September, we could have other tight demanding days.
Is that Eric you just spoke?
Yes, sorry, Eric Schmidt.
Okay, thank you.
To the next caller, please go ahead. Please remember to give your affiliation, name, and question.
This is James Downing at PowerMark today. My question is, I guess normally on a holiday weekend, you expect lower load. Kind of what's the difference this weekend? Why are you having to call flex load for Saturday, Sunday, and Monday when you'd expect there to be lower demand on the system, even with hotter weather?
Well, we're anticipating 10 to 20 degrees higher or above normal temperatures. The pandemic has changed our forecasting profiles, and it's blurred the lines a bit between work days and weekend days. The AC load is likely to be the main factor as we go into this weekend. I think those are the – Mark, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I think that's correct. And just maybe one thing to add, and that is I think the most challenging load period is not necessarily the peak hour load. Rather, it's more like it could be between 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the evening when the loads are still high due to the air conditioning load, but the production of solar production and maybe even wind may be very low because of the weather conditions at the time, and the sun has gone down.
Thank you.
Moving to the next caller. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Dale Kassler with the Sacramento Bee. I couldn't help but noticing that, again, these demand forecasts that John Phipps ran through are a good 4,000 or 5,000 megawatts lower than the peak demand of 2006. So again, it sort of begs the question of why do you think we're going to have a problem this weekend, or possibly could have a problem this weekend?
Yeah, I'll start and then I'll have Mark add to it. Things were quite a bit different back in 2006 in terms of, you know, our portfolio, the resources and capacity that was available. And also on the demand side, things were quite a bit different. For example, we have probably 7,000 or 8,000 megawatts of rooftop solar on the demand side that we didn't have back in 2006 when we achieved the 50,000 plus megawatt peak. So it's really apples and oranges in terms of both on the supply side and on how the demand side looks these days. Mark, what could you add to that?
I think you made some good points. I'll just add a little bit to that, and that is you had 50,000 megawatts of load, but no behind the meters, or virtually no behind the meter solar at the time, and that kind of illustrates the fact that load has grown between 2006 and now, but that peak hour load has been met and largely met by the behind the meter solar production. When the sun goes down, you still have that load, which is now higher load than you used to experience in that 7 to 8 p.m. period. So that's why those hours are now more challenging than that peak hour load, even though that peak hour load is maybe less than what you saw in 2006. The other thing, in terms of across the West, we're part of a Western grid, and the West loads and resource mix have also changed. Load has increased in other parts of the West, and the supply and generation infrastructure is changing with some retirement and some change out. So the ability to rely on the level of imported energy may not be there what it was in 2006.
Moving to the next caller. Please go ahead. Please remember to state your affiliation.
Hi, this is Mark Chediak with Bloomberg News. Thanks for holding this conference. I appreciate it. First question I have is if you guys can tell us if you expect to have to resort to rolling blackouts this weekend, or if you can give us a sense of or any color on the possibility of that.
At this point, we're not forecasting any blackouts. As we get closer and closer to each day, we'll know better about the accuracy of our forecast. You know, tomorrow will be our first opportunity to do the day ahead market for Saturday and so forth. But at this point, we're not forecasting any blackouts on the system.
And if I look at the weather forecast for the West, it doesn't seem to be as hot across the region as it was for the August 14th, 18th event. Can you kind of characterize what you guys expect to see in terms of imports, or do you still expect those to be constrained?
I agree with you. I think the heat event is not as far-reaching as the mid-August event. That would suggest that there'll be more resources that could be used that are outside of California could be used in California. In terms of those interactions between California and the other balancing authorities, we don't have any constrained transmission situations at this point. Things can change rapidly. We still do have fires in California at the moment, and they move quickly, of course, and that could change the transmission situation. However, we're looking good for potential transfers into California from the West, and the heat event doesn't seem to be as broad sweeping as the mid-August event.
And I'm sorry, can the person who's speaking identify themselves?
Sure. Sorry, it's Eric Schmidt.
Okay. And one last question. Has convergence bidding been suspended? I believe it was during the last event.
This is Mark Rothleder. No, it has not, and that potential could still be there, but we have not made that decision at this point.
Okay, thanks, Mark.
Moving to the next caller, please go ahead, state your name and affiliation.
Thanks. This is Sharon McNary at KPCC Southern California Public Radio. So it's going to be less hot across the West, but could you remind us what the load was experienced back in mid-August when we had the rolling outages? And what else, aside from not having as much heat, are you guys doing differently so as to avoid rolling outages this time around?
Sure. This is Eric Schmidt. On August 14th, the peak load was 46,802. On August 15th, the peak load was 44,957. Then in the subsequent days for 16, 17, and 18, the loads were 43,816 on the 16th. But then Monday and Tuesday, where we had such a great great help from conservation measures, the loads were 45,169 on the 17th of August. And on the 18th of August, the load was our highest all year long at 47,121.
So really
in terms
not
of preparation, very, very close actually to that period of time. Well, and we'll have to wait. Things change quickly in terms of the weather and so on, but at the moment they look close. Close to those numbers. Preparation wise, we're taking our usual preparations. We've to the extent that we had some lessons learned during the mid-August event, namely having some of the state agencies help us with conservation measures and communicating with businesses and customers and so on. We're poised to use those same tools this time. And again, it was very successful, particularly on August 17th and 18th. And we'll, if necessary, hopefully we can invoke that sort of response again for the weekend, if necessary.
Thank you.
To the next caller, please go ahead.
Hi there, this is Colby Bermel with Politico in Sacramento. I wanted to follow up with my colleague's question about out-of-state imports. And what makes the out-of-state balancing authorities able to put in lower bids oftentimes, at least in August? And what can California do to be more competitive?
I'm not sure I understand the question fully. Is Mark...
I was just wanting to just get a sense of just, I think I recall during one of the media briefings last month that other utilities and balancing authorities across the West, that they had the ability to successfully, you know, secure energy for themselves versus energy that would normally be secured in California. And just I just wanted to just get a sense of if there's anything beyond like the simple just economics of that that can be explained.
Yeah, no, I think it's both the economics and they evaluate what is available relative to their demands, and if they have any surplus energy to offer up, they're also buying from the market. So they're out there searching for energy in some cases because they don't have enough energy themselves, and so they're also in that same marketplace trying to buy energy at the same time California is trying to meet its demands. So there's a kind of a mix of conditions and situations out there. Some are long, some are short, and they're all kind of, those who are long are offering into the market. Those who are needing energy are attempting to buy from that market.
Thanks. And I was also struck by what you said about just about working with the state agencies to do the conservation messaging. you know, obviously doing the energy conservation, that's a burden, of course, on the demand side, but what can the supply side do better during this time?
Well, this is Eric Schmidt. Aside from, you know, our traditional resources that are available, our capacity that's available, during the last event, some supply resources that would normally be used for emergency generation, you know, at an industrial facility, data center, whatever, were used as supply elements. In other words, emergency generators were turned on in some cases where they ordinarily would be used only for emergencies, but then allowed to provide electricity to the grid. That's an example of a creative way to have provided more supply for us, particularly on the August 17th and August 18th dates. Mark, is there any other ideas or other input there?
No, I think those are the main things. Making sure that all the resources are in good maintenance condition and available for full output. There are some ambient conditions that limit those outputs of resources due to temperature and conditions, but just making sure everything is trying to be at the maximum available capability.
Thanks, and I've got a final question if you don't mind. Saw this morning that you put out like a notice with regards to load scheduling, and of course asking energy market participants to basically do more accurate and higher forecasts. And was the problem like of underscheduling last time, was that mostly unintentional in terms of like misread forecasts, or were there instances of maybe some bad actors out there?
I think we saw some observation that the overall aggregate demand was scheduled less than what the actual was. Beyond that, we have not made any specific observations in terms of bad actors versus just inaccuracy in forecasting or anything like that. That will probably be something that will be tried to be discussed in the root cause analysis report in more detail.
Great, thanks so much.
Moving to the next caller now. Please go ahead. Looks like that individual may have dropped their phone, so going to the next caller.
Hi, my name is Matt Hoffman, calling from KPBS. So following up on a previous question about rolling blackouts, is there a general sense that if the public doesn't heed these warnings in terms of the flex alert, that we could see rolling blackouts this weekend?
No, not at the moment. Again, we have to get closer to the actual real-time day. And we run a day-ahead market, and that tells us about the match between supply and demand and if there's any infeasibilities. And that would be our trigger to suggest that we could be short at certain times during the day. And at this point, we don't have that kind of trigger. Conservation in a situation like this, though, is always welcome because we don't know. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of variables. You'll remember maybe if you followed along, on the August 14th and 15th, resources can be forced out. So big generation can drop offline. And so the more cushion we have between, between where we need to be, the better. And conservation helps us with that. And at these high lows, our margins actually begin to get narrower and narrower. And so to the extent that people can, turn their thermostat up to 78 or 80 or run their appliances at a different time, it actually makes a significant amount of difference. And it gives us, even if we're not forecasting blackouts at the moment, things can happen very, very suddenly
like I just mentioned, we can lose a unit or have a forced outage, or a fire could interrupt the transmission line, and then we'll have lost our margin. But if there's conservation in play, it helps hedge us, frankly, against unforeseen circumstances. So always welcome. We really appreciate the conservation.
And then in terms of, like, the, just like the general energy market, if you could put it in, like, super layman's terms, I mean, is it just like a buyer's market right now? Like, there's just not a lot of energy to buy, and that's sort of why we're in this predicament too?
This is Mark. I mean, I think at these high load levels, you get into the situation where you have more demand, or approaching that situation where you have more demand than that potential supply available, and that's basically a scarcity situation. And they're basically kind of buying and trying to get buy for that limited amount of supply.
And then just one other one. I know that when we had these rolling blackouts in the middle of August, there wasn't this project online in San Diego County, an unincorporated county, like the, what LS Power is calling like the biggest battery storage site in the world. I mean, that sounds like really good. Is that something that could help us through this time? Is that something you guys are aware of? Or?
We're aware there's right now about 200 and plus 20 megawatts of grid side battery storage devices on the grid, and we're aware that there are many more battery storage resources coming on in the future years, and that will certainly help into these hours where we have the sundown and still high loads. But we have to be able to charge those batteries as well. So we have to be cognizant that in order to charge those batteries, we're going to have to input additional energy in ahead of the time when you need it. And we have to make sure that energy is available at those times.
Cool. Thank you. Appreciate the explanation.
You're welcome.
Moving to the next caller. Please go ahead.
Hello, Jason Fordney with California Energy Markets. I was wondering, as CAISO officials, could you elaborate on what could have been done differently here to avoid this situation? In other words, why are we in this situation? Is it simply a matter of not building enough power plants? And I'm hearing that it's not really the ramping needs that are causing this problem, although that's been discussed quite a bit. I was wondering if that's true. It wasn't really ramping that caused this issue.
Well, Mark, why don't you start with that one question?
So I think from a structural perspective, we're in this transition where some of the older resources are retiring, and we're transitioning to a cleaner set of fleet resources. And as we do that, we believe that we need to be cognizant of the needs of the system, not just at peak hour, and we need to make sure that there's enough capacity and capability to meet the demand in all hours. And I think that's where we believe that the focus needs to be to help address this and avoid this in the future, is ensuring that the capacity and the fleet capability is able to meet the demand, including uncertainty in demand and uncertainty in other supply resources, meet those demand and uncertainties in all hours. And we believe that's necessary to do, and we're with other agencies to ensure that that's the case. But there needs to be build of new resources, and there needs to be cognizant of there's additional retirement coming in future years, including the OTC resources, once they're cooled resources, and Diablo Canyon in 2025, that we have to be aware of, and we believe that there needs to be authorization for new procurement with the right capability for the right hours that needs to start taking place now.
Yeah, and so maybe I can add, this is Eric Schmidt again, maybe I can add a little bit to that. Something that's not obvious is, while for decades we track the peak
the peak for the day, and we resource and have capacity to handle the peak, which this time of year occurs at, you know, 5:30 or 6 o'clock. In the case of August 14th and August 15th, we had to drop firm load, not at the peak, actually, but at what we've been calling, begin to call the net load peak, which occurs at about 7:30 or 8 p.m., when the solar is really ramping heavily off, and we can have 10, 11, 12,000 megawatts of solar on the system, including rooftop solar, which is ramping off at the same time. So that rate of change now is very different from what it was just a few years ago. And that's our real vulnerability these days, is what we call the net peak load this time of year.
I see. So is it accurate to say that it is the ramping needs as the solar comes off that's causing this problem, or am I oversimplifying?
It is an oversimplification, because it is both ramping and absolute need of energy at the time. So you've got, as Eric indicated, you've got that fast ramp out of the solar resources. At the same time, the load is virtually staying high at the high levels, and you need to have other resources that replace that energy that you are ramping out at the time. So in one aspect is you need to be able to ramp in other energy at that same rate that you're losing it, but you need to keep doing that as you transition across those hours, so that you can meet the instantaneous demand at any given time in those periods. So yes, it's a ramping, but it's also an absolute, do you have enough energy at those times when the solar has ramped out?
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Moving to the next caller.
Hi, this is Carla Marquez, KFI News.
Carla, you may have dropped out. We can't hear you.
Oh, no, I'm still here. I just wasn't sure if you heard me. Joined a little bit late because of the WebEx problem. I was wondering if you could just recap for me what you said at the beginning of this meeting.
Sure. This is Eric Schmidt. We're reaching out because we expect above normal temperatures across California, and therefore heavy loads. And we're trying to alert the public and solicit conservation measures.
Unmuted.
We're having a hard time hearing you.
Yeah, the system keeps telling me I was muted and then I'm not muted. So I heard you said that you're trying to get people to conserve electricity. Is that correct?
That's correct. Particularly through the weekend and into Monday.
Okay, is that because everybody's going to be home and just using up the air conditioning?
Yes, it's mostly AC load.
Okay, thank you.
Moving to the next caller. And please remember to use a headset rather than a speaker, because then there will be background noise. Thank you.
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear.
Okay, good.
Nope, please go ahead, ask your question.
Hi, this is Lauren Summer from NPR. It seems like the renewable curtailment has been pretty minimal lately, but I just wanted to see if you could comment on, you know, the loads that have been curtailed. Is that grid congestion? Is that oversupply, or does it have to do with fossil asset scheduling? And does something like that even make a difference on a weekend like this?
This is Mark. I'll take that. So you referred to renewable curtailment. Generally speaking, in the summer, there's very minimal renewable curtailment because there's a load that will sink and you're not in oversupply conditions. There can be some localized oversupply or congestion conditions that would cause some very localized renewable resources to have to curtail their production. But even during the summer, that's fairly limited.
Thanks. And my second question was, I was wondering if there was any measurable impact on solar output lately with all the smoke in the air?
Yeah, that's a good, that's a great question. With the smoke, it does create insulation from the solar capability. And so we do see some reduction in the solar production as a result of that smoke. Now, how much really depends on how widespread it is. Does it is it overlaid with cloud cover, and what that smoke level is during the day? But it it can have an impact on the solar production capability.
Moving to the next caller now. Last hand that is raised, again pressing pound two will indicate they have a question. Pound two. Next caller, please go ahead.
At the S&P Global, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Please go ahead.
I wanted to know why the ISO has to issued a market notice earlier today for all available supply, and I'm wondering the day ahead market or does not, or the inner month market doesn't take care of that. It sounded like a plea for all resources, and that you would pay them extra for that. Can you tell me how that works? Why can't that those resources be scheduled ahead when you know there's going to be a heavy demand day? And are you worried that there might be some market withholding? It seemed like the market notice sort of implied that there might be.
So I'm not aware of any market withholding, but I think what we're trying to do there is ensure that things like Eric mentioned earlier, resources that may make them be able to make themselves available that normally would not, because they are kind of are they emergency backup or other generation that has very limited capability due to limited run hours or environmental limitations. We want to make sure that these are the days make sure that those resources are available and making themselves available to the market. And to your point, we're trying to get those scheduled ahead of time as part of the day ahead market. So that's why we put the notice out ahead of the day ahead market for these high load days.
Okay, thank you. Oh, and would you, what is the difference between the soft big cap price and what would normally be paid? I think the soft big cap of $6.20-something, I guess, per kilowatt month. I'm not familiar with the unit measure. Can you explain that?
Well, okay. So the energy bid cap in the energy market is $1,000 per megawatt hour. What you refer to, I think, is the a soft offer cap on capacity, and that's under our capacity procurement mechanism. If we have to procure additional capacity beyond what is made available through resource adequacy, there is a maximum there's a cap on how much we would pay for that, and $6 or something per kilowatt month is that price.
And how does that differ from what they would normally get? I mean, you have a capacity procurement, a normal capacity procurement mechanism.
No, there's
no?
Capacity is normally procured bilaterally through the resource adequacy mechanism, and through those bilateral contracts, there's a variety of prices. I don't have a typical price, but the capacity procurement mechanism is a backstop in case we get into conditions where we need additional capacity, and that gives us the ability to procure that, and that that cap is the price that we are willing to pay for that capacity.
Can you give any sort of an indication of how much extra the ISO is willing to pay for capacity in a situation like that that goes beyond, if you have to step in beyond the bilateral, normal bilateral arrangements for capacity?
It's that $6 and I think 36 cents. I may be off on the cents here per kilowatt month.
Is that a lot of money? I mean, I don't really understand the what that means. Is there any way that you could?
I think that's a longer answer than I can probably take on this call.
I see. Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Moving to the next caller. One moment. Please go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost you. One moment again. Please go ahead.
No, you've answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Next caller, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Tom Pochari and worldaffairsmonthly.com, and I have some Twitter accounts monitoring risk. You guys are there? I'm first time I'm calling in, so I want to make sure I'm actually connected. You there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just talking to my son, an expert. He's 20 years old. He knows a lot about the grid and electricity, and we were discussing the problem this morning. But, of course, I think today you're not necessarily going to take this kind of question, but we were thinking that there were two problems, basically a weak grid maintenance and then also, a commendable but zealous, maybe overzealous reliance on renewable. And so lacking the power that we need when we have high demand, you guys are trying to figure out what to do in the short term. I was just hoping to get some comment from you as to whether you agree with my comment there, or, you know, my son and I were talking about this, or, you know, what your comment would be. Of course, in the short term, we have to figure out how to get more capacity.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would say it's an over-reliance on renewables. I think it's a transitional matter that we need to ensure that we have additional resources during those times when those renewable resources are not able to produce. So we will continue to rely heavily on renewables, but we need to now augment that with things that can produce when those resources don't produce, whether it be with storage or geothermal or other resources that produce during those times. We need to have a diverse mix of resources that can meet the demand in all hours. And so I think we can do that and still drive towards a high renewable, low carbon grid, but we have to be more thoughtful and maybe more aggressive about ensuring that we build that capacity and that capability that can meet all those hours.
That's correct. And I don't want to get... I wanted to point out that I didn't want to look like I'm trashing renewable. I was just thinking that, you know, in some cases we're going to need backup, like you said. And, now what about the grid maintenance issue? Do you think that possibly is a variable?
Oh, I'll let Eric cover that one.
Well, yeah, I don't think so per se. I think, obviously some of the resources that we use are older than others.
Okay.
But, the participants that the the utilities, you know, have strict guidelines around how they have to maintain their infrastructure. And
yes,
you know, I trust that's what takes place. And there's a lot of checks and balances around that.
Sure, sure. Okay.
So that doesn't feel to me like that will be an issue here. Well, I'm going to swing back for a moment to your first question. I think the operative word is transition. So the journey to a carbon-free grid is complicated, needless to say, and we're in a transition. And when we get on the other side of it, then it'll be clear how we navigated those waters. But until we are able to get, you know, a lot of storage on the system, we talked about storage earlier in this call, and we just have a few hundred megawatts on the system. But real forward 5 years, 10 years, we'll have a lot more storage. And again, the characteristics of our portfolio will continue to change, but we've got to have bridging and transitional resources that can help us deal with the net load peak that I spoke about earlier, and so forth. So that's the focus in my view, is around transition, going from where we are to a carbon-free grid.
Sure. So we're expecting for sure to get to reach a carbon-free grid at some point. I mean, you know, everybody's 100% confident, given these.
There's a policy target to be carbon-free by 2045 in California.
Okay.
And we've made a spectacular journey in that direction. I mean, and while we're having these challenges, it doesn't mean that. The mission isn't a solid mission, and we're going to get there. This is hard stuff, and but we're going to get there.
All right, sure enough, we could probably manage, but the cost of, and again, I don't want to give anybody the impression I'm trashing renewable. I'm not, but the cost of the renewable operation is quite a bit more expensive, is it not? And the public might get pretty irritated by the higher cost and the rolling blackouts if we don't make the transition too smoothly.
I think it's, when you say it's the operating cost, I mean the operating cost may actually be less on the renewable resources. The total
really?
Cost, there's an investment. You have to put an investment in that new infrastructure. But because it's a fuel, it's not a fuel based resource. The marginal cost of those resources are virtually zero. There is an investment cost you have to make into making that transition, as Eric indicated. And I characterize it as an investment, because once you get through that investment, you've achieved both your targets and your goals, and you've got the new infrastructure in place that can meet the grid reliability needs of the future. So that's the challenge. It is a transition, and as we do that, we will have these challenging points in time, and we will learn from those challenges to ensure that we maintain a affordable grid, reliable grid of the future.
Okay. Well, that's very
the counterbalance.
Go ahead.
The counterbalance to that is, what if we don't do it? What's the cost to our planet, frankly, if we're not able to make these kinds of strides? I mean,
sure.
Quantify that one.
Well, yeah, you know, I was talking to my son for the past couple of months about this, and of course, I don't want to characterize myself as some, anti-renewable crazy, because I'm not. But I was thinking that, you know, we don't really know for sure if CO2 is going to be that harmful. In other words, you know, the more green you have, the more oxygen you get. You probably know my argument here. It's not 100% certain that CO2 is going to be damaging. And then also my son pointed out that, no, again, I want to emphasize that I think we should go to as much renewable as possible. But the CO2 issue may not be that imperative a factor. But back to my argument that 200 parts per million, he's an expert on this. I mean, as you go higher in concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere, you have less of a capacity of the CO2 to absorb heat. And so I don't know. I think the public probably is going to get a little irritated after a while if this transition proves to be kind of rocky. But you know, look, I emphasize again, I'm all for renewable. It's just that I wonder if we're being realistic about this.
Well, thank you. Thank you for your questions. Really appreciate it. We are running out of time here, so. Do we have any other questions in the queue before we wrap it up, Andre?
No other hands raised.
No other hands raised? Okay. Well, thank you very much, all our speakers. Really appreciate it, and we appreciate your participation today. Thanks, Andre, for your help as well.
And that concludes our conference. Thank you for using AT&T Event Conferencing Enhanced. You may now disconnect.